I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Podcorn, for sponsoring this episode. Check out sponsorship opportunities and start monetizing your podcast today by signing up at podcorn.com/podcasters. Podcorn is a super easy way to monetize your podcast, and it was truly a no-brainer for me. You see, Podcorn makes it super easy to work with sponsors. They have a marketplace that allows you to interact with potential sponsors, which is super intuitive to use. You can choose from host-read ads, guest interviews, topical discussions, and more. I've been working with Podcorn for about 9 months now, and I've already had 7 different show sponsors. With Podcorn, there's no middleman. I'm able to set my own rates and work directly with sponsors. The best thing is, podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform. You don't lose any of the rights to your podcast, and Podcorn supports you the entire time. With the marketplace, you have access to brands, and Podcorn provides transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when you have ads in your show. Click the link in my show notes to sign up for Podcorn today and find the perfect sponsorship for you. That's podcorn.com/podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Sean Ventura, the host of True Crime Freaks, a new podcast. I explore some really unbelievable cases on this podcast, such as the disappearance of Heather Elvis, the Hollywood Ripper who killed Ashton Kutcher's date, and the Twitter Killer, who is a serial killer from Japan. Check out True Crime Freaks today and let us know what you think. Subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks, everybody.
True Consequences is a proud member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild.
The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundin. This episode deals with topics of violence and murder, and it may not be suitable for younger audiences. Some names have been replaced with pseudonyms to protect the privacy of eyewitnesses. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to True Consequences. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundin. Today I'm going to discuss the solved but unresolved case of the murder of Michael Sanchez. The suspect in this case is known and has been identified, but they are on the run. Michael's family have been fighting for justice for over 7 years now, yet the fugitive remains at large. I'm hoping that my listeners may be able to help by reporting any information as to the whereabouts of Michael's killer to Crime Stoppers at 505-843-STOP or at www.p3tips.com. Let's get into the case. On June 18th, 2013, Michael Sanchez was pumping gas at the Valero gas station on 98th Street. He was on his way to work for the first day of his new promotion. He was going to start working as the manager of a car lot. Michael had done so many jobs at the car lot with the intent of learning enough about the business to get a promotion. This was something he had been working towards for a long time, and he was extremely excited about his future, but he was also extremely tired, because he didn't get much sleep the night before. No, he wasn't sleepless from excitement, as you might expect. The real problem was that his neighbor's dog would bark incessantly through the night and keep him up. He was almost just as upset and tired as he was excited to start his new job. While Michael was sleepily filling up his gas tank, a man approached him and started chasing him. Eventually, the man caught up with Michael and stabbed him in the stomach. This caused Michael to fall to the ground. The attacker then started stabbing him repeatedly in the back. Michael was stabbed 29 times by the assailant. He only stopped when he noticed an eyewitness running towards them, and it was in that moment that the killer ran away. The attack happened in broad daylight, in the middle of an extremely busy area during a morning commute. 911 was called, and Michael was rushed to UNM Hospital, and he was brought into emergency surgery. Unfortunately, his injuries were so severe that he did not survive. Michael was only 27 years old when he died. Here's a quote from one of the first responding officers in the police report.
On June 18th, 2013, at about 08:15 hours, I was dispatched to 141 98th Street Northwest in reference to a stabbing that occurred at the Valero gas station. I arrived on the scene on the north side of the gas station and blocked the north entrance of any vehicle or pedestrian traffic, keeping people from coming or going. Once on the scene, I began to make contact with several people in the parking lot who were witnesses to the incident. After contacting several of the witnesses, I had them fill out written witness statements in regards to what they had seen. I advised the witnesses on the scene that due to the warm weather conditions, if they wanted to go inside the gas station to take shelter, they could do so. I obtained 8 witness statements from several people who were in the parking lot during the incident and people who were inside the store. After obtaining the written statements from the witnesses on the scene, I was relocated to the intersection of Volcano Road and 98th West Side, where I blocked all traffic, vehicle, and foot from going westbound on Volcano Road. While on scene, Detective C. Grigo, 3142, collected all the written statements I'd received from the witnesses. I was later cleared from my listed intersection and allowed to go back in service. This is the extent of my involvement in this investigation.
Before we go too much further in the case, I want to take a moment to acknowledge who Michael was as a person. I want you to hear from his family, what he meant to them, and how he impacted their lives. As you know by now, I always want to be victim and victim family focused when presenting these cases, so let's learn a little bit about Michael. According to his adoptive mom, Liz, Michael was a very loving, kind-hearted, shy, and quiet young man who grew up with only the option of becoming a strong, independent man. According to Liz, Michael's parents separated before he was born. This led him to not having a relationship with his father. Michael was raised by his mom, a single mother, who was working very hard to support them. And then when he was 15 years old, his mother passed away from cancer. To say that he had a tough life is putting it lightly. He was very close to his mother, and her loss was devastating for him. Michael's aunt Liz and her family became a refuge for him. They took him in after his mom died and cared for Michael as their own son. Her son, Isaac, even considered Michael to be a brother to him, rather than a cousin. Here's another quote from Liz. Quote, "Through patience, love, and understanding from the right people in his life, Michael was able to find his way, and he learned to come out of his shell, even after suffering from the loss of his mother at a very young age. It was a big adjustment for him when we were awarded a guardianship over him, and he first came to live with us. He'd always been very close to our family, especially to my children. They were cousins and were raised to become siblings, but he still struggled to fit into our family. He was missing his mother horribly, and he needed the love of his real father, but that was never to be." End quote. Michael seemed to thrive under the loving care and guidance of his aunt and uncle. He even started to show an interest in sports like baseball, football, basketball, and boxing. Not only was he interested in those sports, but he was also naturally talented and gifted athletically. The sport that he loved the most and was the best at was boxing. It was his favorite. Another favorite pastime of his was studying and reciting statistics from his favorite sports teams and players. He was like a walking, talking almanac. Michael was described as being very loyal and family-focused. He loved his family and friends, and he was very protective of anyone who was close to him. Another quote from Liz. Quote, "He loved music. He loved to write, and he was very artistic. Michael was able to accomplish what our expectations were of him, just like our other children, and we were very proud of him." End quote. He was loved by everyone in his life, despite the hardships he faced early on. He was starting to build a future for himself. He was working hard every day to move up in his career. He was striving for the American dream of success, which is built on a foundation of hard work. And as I mentioned before, Michael had just gotten the big promotion that he had been hoping for, and he was all set to start that job on the day that he was murdered. He talked excitedly to family and friends about his future. He had worked so hard to get promoted, and he was elated when it finally happened. His adoptive mom, Liz, said, quote, "We were devastated the day when that dreaded knock came to our door. The dreaded knock that every parent thinks about, but hopes and prays will never come. In the aftermath of living with the fact that his life meant so little, that his murderer remains free to walk our streets." End quote. Let's look at some of the eyewitness statements.
"I pulled into the Valero gas station to fill my tank with gas and noticed a male bleeding and covered in blood, screaming, 'Help!' The male then lay down on the ground once he was told by a male worker that the ambulance was on the way.
A customer came into the store stating we need to call the police because, quote, there was a stabbing and they're going to kill him, end quote. I proceeded to call the police and looked outside and saw a male on top of the victim stabbing at him. He got off the victim and left in a beige Ertan vehicle south on 98th Street.
8:15 a.m. A young male was standing near a gas pump, bleeding badly. There were customers standing around, as well as staff from the Valero near 98th and Central. I ran to help the man, who then collapsed. He was saying he couldn't breathe. I had him talk to me and tried to keep him awake until emergency help arrived. I stayed with him until the ambulance came. He had many stab wounds covering his arms and chest area.
I seen a tan truck pull into the Valero from northbound 98th. He cut off a car when driving into the station. The man in the tan truck was a Hispanic male with black hair and a black mustache. He then drove to the middle of the gas pumps. This was the last I seen of him. I was crossing 98th to turn northbound when the car from Arizona turned to 98th southbound. The man in the tan truck looked to be about mid 30 to 40 years old. The time I seen this take place was 8 a.m. to 8:15 a.m.
Here's a quote from one of the police supplements, quote, I was able to view the surveillance video of the incident with Impact Detective Veronica Fick. In the video, I observed the victim's vehicle pull into the parking lot of the gas station at around 086 hours. The victim pulls up on the south side of the gas pump. The victim's vehicle is a gold-colored, older model passenger vehicle. The victim is seen entering the gas station building and approaches the front counter. Gas station employees advise the victim paid cash for the gas. The victim exits the gas station and walks back to his vehicle. The video has poor resolution, but I was able to see the victim's head over the top of his vehicle. It appears he put the gas pump into the gas tank. The victim then walked towards the front of his vehicle. At the same time, a large, older model, tan-colored pickup truck drives into the parking lot from the north entrance of the gas station. The pickup truck pulls up to the north side of the same gas pump as the victim's vehicle, pump number 3. The victim's vehicle and the pickup truck are now parked parallel to each other and are both facing the same direction, east. Within seconds, I observe the offender exit the pickup truck and the victim runs away from the offender. The victim ran east through the parking lot. The offender caught up to the victim before he reached the building and attacked him. The offender can be seen on top of the victim, and it appears the offender's arm is moving up and down multiple times in a stabbing motion. Witnesses say they could hear the victim screaming for help. From what I observed on the surveillance video, the victim seemed to be caught off guard by the attack. In the video, the victim did not appear to be in distress while paying for his gas, nor did he appear in any distress while pumping gas. The victim was only able to run a few feet before being attacked. I then assisted the scene perimeter security. While at my perimeter post, I was approached by two male subjects, identified as Joey Gonzalez and Fred Smith. Gonzalez and Smith both advised that they are employees with the New Mexico Department of Transportation. They stated that they witnessed an incident at the gas station earlier and were concerned when they passed by a short while later and saw crime scene tape surrounding the building. Gonzalez and Smith said that at approximately 8:10 hours this morning, they were exiting the parking lot of the Valero gas station on the north entrance. They said that they were waiting for traffic to clear when they observed a large tan-colored pickup truck enter from the same entrance, said that the truck came into the parking lot from northbound 98th Street. They said the truck appeared to be traveling fast and that the truck cut off another vehicle that was also entering the parking lot at the same time. Gonzalez stated that the truck continued north through the parking lot and pulled into one of the gas pumps farther to the north. He stated the driver of the other vehicle appeared to be upset over the incident and they assumed it was possibly a road rage incident. Gonzalez and Smith said that they did not witness any altercation, but by the way the driver of the pickup was driving, they thought it possibly had something to do with the crime scene. They described the pickup truck as an older model, tan-colored Chevy. They also stated the driver of the pickup truck appeared to be Hispanic, with dark hair and a mustache. I obtained written statements from Gonzalez and Smith and immediately advised the Violent Crimes Unit. I assisted with the scene security until I was relieved by Officer B. Johnson, My lapel camera was utilized and indicated it was in proper working condition at the time of this incident. All copies were turned over to crime scene investigators. I have no further involvement. Another witness told police officers the following.
Witnesses observed a male on the ground and another male on top of him. Marcus stated that the male on top had a knife, and he was stabbing the male on the ground numerous times on the chest and stomach area. Marcus then saw the male get up and leave the parking lot in the listed vehicle. Marcus was able to get the license plate of the offender. The male victim then got up from the ground and walked to the back of what appeared to be his own vehicle. The victim then stumbled forward and fell to the ground. Marcus stated that the male offender was heavyset and was wearing a gray t-shirt and appeared to be in his 30s.
Another responding officer indicated the following in his report.
I arrived on scene and observed an Hispanic male lying in a pool of blood near gas pump number 5. I contacted a witness standing near the victim, who was later identified as Mr. Marcus, who provided me with a description of the offender and the vehicle he was driving. Mr. advised me that the offender was driving a beige over maroon older model Chevy Z71 pickup with a New Mexico license plate of IWD060. Mr. Plasencia described the offender as a heavyset Hispanic male or Mexican national wearing a gray t-shirt with a mustache or goatee. He told me the offender fled southbound on 98th in the described truck approximately 2 minutes after I arrived on the scene. I advised dispatch to broadcast an ATL attempt to locate, ref the offender, and vehicle description to all units. I assisted in securing the crime scene while paramedics from the Albuquerque Fire Department worked on the victim. He was transported to UNM Hospital, suffering from numerous stab wounds to the torso. I attempted to obtain a verbal statement from the victim just after my arrival, but was unable to do so due to the victim in and out of consciousness. I was later advised that the victim was identified as Michael Sanchez, age 27. After running the license plate on the offender vehicle, the possible suspect was identified as Ricardo Villanueva Cordova. This incident may have been precipitated by a dispute between the victim and offender at a trailer park near 10200 Central Avenue Southwest. Based upon an earlier incident, it appeared that the suspect may have followed the victim to the Valerio gas station, where both subjects became involved in a verbal dispute that later escalated into a stabbing. The victim later died after surgery at UNN Hospital. At the time of this report, the offender was still at large.
According to Michael's family, he lived next door to Ricardo Villanueva Cordova. There had been some conflict between the two men. Villanueva Cordova had dogs that were left outside all the time and barked incessantly. This was a constant issue because the dogs would keep Michael up all night barking. Michael was growing tired of not sleeping, and in April of 2013, he called his brother Isaac for advice. His brother told him that he shouldn't argue with Ricardo, but instead complain to animal control to deal with the situation. So that's what he did. He called animal control at least 2 times prior to the murder. Not only did the dogs bark all the time, but they would also get under Michael's home and make lots of noise. And they would chase Michael as he tried to enter his own home. Michael was even bitten at least 3 times by these dogs. Animal control showed up at Ricardo Villanueva Cordova's home on April 13, 2013. They educated him on leash laws as well as animal licensing and animals at large ordinances. He was given a verbal warning and a citation. The citation gave him a certain period to correct the problem. He was also warned that failure to comply would result in additional charges filed against him. On April 25th, Michael called Animal Control once again to complain about Ricardo's unwillingness to comply with the laws as they pertain to his pets. Animal Control again confronted Ricardo, and they told him that he had until May 17th to either surrender the dogs or follow the law. He was told very clearly that they would file criminal charges against him if he failed to meet the deadline. He claimed that he understood. Michael had attempted futilely to remedy the situation through talking and calling animal control, but this never led to any change in behavior from Ricardo, so he was forced to call animal control multiple times. And this is why Michael was so tired on the morning of the attack. things came to a head the morning of the murder. Michael and Ricardo had argued that morning about the dog's barking. Michael told Ricardo that he would call animal control for a third time if he didn't get control of them. Ricardo's family claimed that Michael had hurt their dog, and they found the dog bleeding after the argument, in what they claimed was a hit and run. Now, I have not been able to verify that that actually happened, and so I cannot speak to the veracity of their claims. But knowing that the dogs were always running around the mobile home park, it seems like anyone could have hit the dog, since they weren't secured in a yard or the home. However, the interaction angered Ricardo so much, and this situation was what led him to take the life of an innocent young man with his whole future ahead of him. This was his reason for murdering Michael. It was senseless and violent for no reason. Police immediately knew who the killer was and started to narrow down the investigation in on Ricardo Villanueva Cordova. This is an extremely frustrating outcome for the family because their killer has been identified, but he has not been brought to justice, and it's been almost 8 years now. So police followed up on locating Villanueva Cordova by going to his residence, which was listed on his motor vehicle registration. Here's a quote from the attending officer who arrived at the residence of Villanueva Cordova. Quote, "I responded to the address, along with other officers, to check for the vehicle and offender. When we arrived, I had officers set up a perimeter around the mobile home park. While setting up at the mobile home park, I was advised by Officer D. Padilla that he was making contact with the sister of Ricardo Villanueva. He also requested me to that location because the female was a Spanish speaker and he needed help translating. I spoke with the female, Rosa Villanueva, who stated that she was Ricardo Villanueva's sister and was on her way to the doctor. I asked her if Ricardo was home and she said no. She told me Ricardo left a short time before she did and was possibly going to pick up a hose for a propane line. She said the only people at the residence were her mother and her three children. I told her we would need to make contact at the residence, and she started shaking. She asked me to tell her what was going on with her brother. We made contact at the space number 6 with Rose and Ricardo's mother, Socorro Cordova, along with three children. I advised their mother we needed to speak with Ricardo in reference to an incident, and she advised me that he was not home. Once the residence was secured, I spoke with both Socorro and Rosa in more detail. I advised Socorro that Ricardo had been involved in an altercation. I asked her if she knew of any problems with the neighbor in space 50, and she said there had been constant problems between them and the neighbor. She had never actually witnessed them because she had only been here about 1 month. I spoke with Rosa about her brother and inquired if she knew where he might be. Rosa stated earlier this morning the neighbor, who was later identified as Michael Sanchez and the victim of the stabbing, went over to their residence yelling. Rosa said Michael was mad because the dogs had been barking and keeping him up. Later in the morning, Ricardo heard the neighbor's vehicle and looked outside the bedroom window. Ricardo then saw their dog had been run over, so they all went outside. Rosa picked up the dog and carried him inside. Ricardo told Rosa he would be right back and left in his truck. Rosa thought Ricardo was going to get a hose for the propane at the house. She did not think anything of it until we contacted her regarding the altercation. I did assist violent crime detectives later with a more in-depth interview with Rosa. While I was at the mobile home park waiting on a status and obtaining more information from Rosa and Socorro, I was advised Ricardo had a girlfriend named Ofelia. As I was obtaining more information, a female arrived at the residence identifying herself as Ricardo's girlfriend. I asked her if she knew where Ricardo was, and she said no. She said she received a call from Ricardo around 08:20 hours, and he appeared to be upset. She said that Ricardo told her in Spanish, "Acuchillan a alguien muchas veces y se me hace que lo mate," which translates to, "I stabbed someone several times and I think I killed him." Ricardo then asked her to go take care of her mom because she was by herself. Ricardo's girlfriend told him not to leave and to turn himself in. Ricardo hung up. She could not get him to answer the phone again. So Ricardo fled the scene and went into hiding. Police continued to question people close to Ricardo to determine what, if anything, they knew about his whereabouts. After a year of searching for the main suspect, Ricardo Villanueva Cordova was indicted by the grand jury on charges of first-degree murder, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. He remains on the run to this day and is thought to be hiding, most likely in Mexico. If you or anyone you know has information that could lead to the arrest of this fugitive, please call Crime Stoppers at 505-843-STOP or go to p3tips.com. You can remain completely anonymous. Albuquerque Metro Crime Stoppers is offering a $1,000 cash reward for tips or information that lead to the capture and arrest of Ricardo Villanueva Cordova. The Michael S. Sanchez Reward Fund is currently at $2,000 and will be awarded by the Sanchez-Lucero family for any information that leads to Cordova's capture and arrest. You can reach the Lucero family through Michael's Facebook page, which is linked in the show notes. I would like to thank the following people for helping me with the voiceover talent in this episode: Brian Waters, Ben and Karen from Crime and Compulsion Podcast, Matt Kennicott from Fat Guy Eats Podcast, Ariel Cooksey from Malice, Melanie Peterson from Mask of Sanity Podcast, and Ryan Freeman from What's Up ABQ. Special thanks to the family of Michael Sanchez for allowing me to cover Michael's case, and to Liz Lucero for providing me with insight into who Michael was and what he meant to his family and friends. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.